When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Live from the Bills' famous cheese spread studios in the downstairs pub, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Over my right shoulder, at the high top table, is the big fella, the tuna, Country Matt Kempf. And bellied up to the bar, a man who I didn't think about long enough to come up with a witty introduction this week, but a man who we are very thankful to have back in the Bill's Famous Cheese Spread Studios with us tonight, the fabulous one, Freddie Benders. Welcome back from vacation.
Glad to be back, guys.
I mean, you're wearing an American flag scarf, but the way it's thrown over you, you couldn't look more like a Frenchman than I've ever seen. I don't even know how this is possible.
I had to wear the American scarf for the Mexico-USA match tonight. Great rivalry,
is
in
it?
Case anyone didn't know.
Is it a rivalry?
It is.
Man,
no idea.
Somebody could make a lot of money if they did it, some sort of documentary film about the rivalry.
Couldn't agree more.
Get on it, awesome.
Bezos.
I would love to see a documentary. You didn't say nothing about my tan, dog. What do you think?
Great tan. You happy now?
I have no lines. No farmer tan.
I don't want to think about how that got there.
But I'm feeling great. You didn't say nothing about my Reds hat.
Why would I?
Because we're hot, baby. We're hot.
That's cute.
America's team.
Okay. That's fun.
Good to be here, guys.
I'm going to talk about that America's team thing here in just a little bit. We are watching the pregame to the USA-Mexico soccer game. We also have the final holes of the U.S. Open on, which started earlier today. Tons of stuff to get to this week, guys. I do want to thank everybody that listens every week. Remind everyone that we are on social media, on Twitter, at Blockout Pod. On Facebook, just type Blockout Sports Pod into your Facebook search bar. I thought we would get started tonight. Fred had a great breakdown of the Belmont Stakes, which was took place last Saturday, and turned out to be a pretty good race, much as Fred had anticipated.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Oh, God.
Fred, why don't you tell us all how that worked out, and did anyone? I know I didn't make any money on the race, but Fred, did you? And did it kind of work out the way you thought it might?
Well, it did a little bit. I apologize if anyone had hit show or any of the horses that I went after. I was trying to get value. Arcangelo was the winner, which a lot of people knew that was a hot horse firing big time. And I think if I remember right, I said that horse might be one of the better horses at the end of the year come Breeders' Cup time. But I do want to give a great shout out to that horse and
his trainer, which
and
was,
his trainer,
that was really cool.
Jenna Antonucci.
Antonucci,
who is a female trainer. And how cool is that?
Excellent quote that she had after doing that.
Yeah, I agree.
Which was, if they don't give you a seat at the table, you make your own table.
Yeah.
And I really thought that was cool.
How awesome. And yeah, the video of her watching the race, I don't know if you guys have seen
that.
Dude,
she was into it, man.
She got kind of overtaken at some point about halfway through the race. I'm not sure that she even remembered what the name of her horse was.
She didn't. She was calling
it
horse.
She was just going, go horse, go horse.
Yeah.
And, man, it was awesome.
With all the big dogs involved in that, Babford, Cox, all that, it was very cool. And dude, she knew she had a hot horse. And a lot of people knew she had a hot horse. Went off at great odds. That was a great value horse. And whoever bet that, God love you. I mean, I'm telling you, it was great. But let's be real. Forte ran a fantastic. Dude, that was a great race. It really was. I think some of the horses made their move a little too late, but that is the Belmont Stakes. There is more there at the end than you know until you get there. And, buddy, they were coming. Matter of fact, after Arcangelo crossed the line, the next, and there was a dead heat for third, the next four horses were within one link of each other. I mean, it was pretty awesome. So Forte ran a great race. I really believe in that. Flying at the end. Tappet Trice, Tuna's old horse, ran a great race, and there'll be a lot coming from him.
Old news.
Next time. I'm looking for him to pop up in a couple other races down the line. Hit Show, I thought, ran a really good race. And Angel of Empire, they were in the dead heat for fourth. And I was just impressed by all those horses coming at the end. I still think all five of those horses are great horses. Don't forget, on Sunday was the Matt Wynn Stakes, and guess who won that? Disarm, the horse that was fourth in the Derby, beat Verifying. So Disarm is moving up the list, folks, for some future races like the Travers and things that are upcoming. So if you really, I'm going to end it with this, that I have the top 3-year-olds on a list here. And I think that's how we should leave it and see like how these horses are coming in. And I'm talking about fillies as well. Don't forget about Pretty Mischievous, who has won her last two, including the Oaks.
Right.
So if you look at it this way, I have my top 7, Forte 1. And yes, I have Forte 1 because he ran that race and was probably going to be the favorite in the Derby and a couple more. That horse is ready in the next race. Mage.
Hold on. I'm confused. Are you just doing an overall ranking of what
yes,
you think the best horses are?
Right, okay. Now, this is just my opinion.
Okay.
Forte, Mage, who hasn't ran since he won. Angel of Empire, who has been up by the front every time. Pretty Mischievous, who's won her last two. I throw Disarm up there. I throw Arcangelo next. Tappet Trice. And then National Treasure. And then Hit Show. But we've got some good horses, and I hope that all them are in running like these horses. You know, you kind of start pulling away from kind of like the 4-year-olds are now. Zandon, White Abario, Charge It. You have these horses that you see now that were in the Derby that have pulled themselves away from everybody else that are doing real well, and these horses are getting ready to do those same things for the Breeders' Cup. So, anyways, it was a good race. And hopefully Disarm jumps in there. And I would love to see him running against some of these horses, including Pretty Mischievous. I would love to see her run against the boys in a race, maybe the Travers or something.
I agree.
So, but horse racing's kind of going to take a back seat for a while.
Well, that's a shame.
And on to other races. Did you have money on National Treasure?
No, I don't bet horses.
Yeah, you do.
No.
You had National Treasure in that race,
there's
and he
more
did
important
not
things
win.
In life than horse racing, Jerry. Freddie.
All right. Well, I know you have money on Oral Roberts, but in the
Oral Roberts didn't run in the Bell in the Belmont Stakes
in the baseball.
And speaking of that, that's a great segue. Let's jump right into that quickly. The NCAA baseball tournament continued this past weekend, and Tuna, I know that you are a extremely interested and someone that follows it very closely.
So
what were your thoughts about
there's
the
something
tournament?
I want to bring up with you as an IU fan, Travis. What are your thoughts on the accusations of the Hoosiers cheating at Kentucky Proud Park against the UK Wildcats?
I honestly have no idea
you
what
haven't
you're
heard
talking
about.
This? No.
Okay. There's been a lot of commotion between a lot of drama between IU and UK.
I love it.
Apparently the first game that they played, Kentucky was saying that IU had cameras set up out there and was filming signs and relaying that information.
I did
sort
hear
like
that they didn't want to play. They're never going to play them
again.
Yeah. I heard that.
IU was upset at the way that the Kentucky players were dancing and grinding their hips when they got on base. They seemed like a bunch of curmudgeons that were cheaters.
Wow.
I don't know really what happened there.
The way I see it is Calipari said years ago after Indiana beat their ass that he didn't want to play them anymore at Assembly Hall because he was frightened by the atmosphere.
I was at that game, and I was frightened when I ran out of the
And, Fred, you
arena.
Should have been.
I didn't know that rivalry was that bad until I took off running out of there and had people coming at me left and right. I'll be honest with y'all. I have never been. I've been to Bama games at the Iron Bowl versus Auburn on the Plains. I've been to other games, and I've never been to Death Valley versus LSU. Sorry, Clemson, you're not Death Valley. And little old Clemson. But I have never left a sporting event fearing for my life like I did after that last-second shot. That who hit it, Travis?
Christian Watford.
Christian Watford against Anthony Davis and company. And we took off out of there, and I've never had people searching for me on the way out of that place. I was scared for my life. It was actually pretty impressive. I've never been so fired up when I got out there to see the sunlight.
I'll just say this, Tuna. I'm going to assume that that whole scenario you just laid out was complete bullshit. And I can't imagine that my beloved Indiana Hoosiers would ever do anything untoward or, do something like that, setting up cameras. I mean, quite frankly, if I was Indiana, I might have my lawyers look into this.
I totally agree with you. nobody believes anything that happens down in Lexington anyway. They're a bunch of scumbags down there. Nobody really. And like I
Easy
said, like
bourbon drinkers.
Like I said last week, they had to go to Baton Rouge where hopes and dreams go to die, and that's exactly what happened. So Baton Rouge ate up the Kentucky Wildcats and spit them out.
As they do many people.
So
in baseball.
Do you have the
and football
the brackets?
Yeah, it's
where you can tell us who is left and what you see happening going forward.
Okay, so tomorrow, Friday, we have it starts out with Oral Roberts and TCU. And I know Travis is a big Oral Roberts fan. maybe not the university, but as a person, I know he loves Oral Roberts. So we have the Christians from TCU against the Evangelist from Oral Roberts. So this should be...
Who loves Jesus more? Jesus, that's what we're going to find out.
Jesus
here.
Will be in the building for the game tomorrow. So that'll be fun. TCU is probably, they're my sneaky pick to win it all. They've been really hot. They've been crushing the ball lately.
They have.
I don't know how they're going to do when they get against some of this top-notch pitching that they're going to face going forward.
That's what you said about football.
Yeah. Well, no, TCU, I said they were crap all year.
What's going on in TCU? Are they like paying, how are they on top of the world on everything? What's going on to them Horn Frogs?
They have the power of Christ.
Oh, my Lord.
And then the night game tomorrow is Virginia and Florida, which I don't know what to make of this.
That's a tough game.
It is. Virginia, I've kind of put them down most of the year and said they're overrated. They've looked pretty good here in this postseason. Florida has been solid all year. That's a tough team to face. So I don't really know what's going to happen here, but I like TCU to come out of this end of it. Saturday, we have a great matchup with LSU and Tennessee, which, all right, LSU, they're going to win this first game. Skeens is pitching his butt off right now, who is incredible. And I believe that Dylan Cruz, who has the third best batting average right now in all of college baseball, he hit his first career home run off of Skeens, Paul Skeens, when Skeens was a pitcher at Air Force before he transferred. And now they're teammates at LSU, which is kind of a cool story.
That's crazy.
So, and then you have two of the most pretentious schools in all of college going against each other next with Stanford and Wake Forest.
Hey, by the way, can we hit on that Stanford-Texas game?
Dude,
yeah.
What a terrible way to lose that game.
We've got to talk.
Yeah.
There were so many things that went on in that game. I mean...
For that ball to get, I mean, for you to lose a game because a ball gets caught in the lights, like, what do you do there? Like, I mean, we all played baseball as kids. Like, when a fly ball gets lost, there's nothing you can do.
But what about the other things that happened in that game? I mean,
the home run that wasn't.
Yeah.
The guy sticking his hands up in the air, throwing his helmet. Yeah. By the way, that just hit the wall.
Yeah.
In right center or whatever it was.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. But
that was a crazy game.
It was. And honestly, Tuna and I talked about it last week. Things like that bring more eyeballs because that the finish of that game, as wonky as it was, it went viral.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, there were no other games on either. It was great.
About that game the next day. I mean, I must have seen it 40 times on my social media feeds.
And that's the thing. College baseball, there's so many, especially this time of year, there's so many exciting moments throughout. And it's like the NCAA is trying to turn viewership away because you see the big bat flips. You see, who was the kid? This team ran out there and put a chain on him while he was running to home plate.
That was Indiana.
Yeah, that was Indiana.
Oh,
sorry. But
drink.
Yeah, that's something that, like, I don't see a problem with that, and it makes it more fun. And your whole purpose is to try to grow this game more and get more people watching.
And the Indiana kid, he ran out like a foot and a half out of mm-hmm. the dugout.
Yeah.
It wasn't that big a deal.
No, it really wasn't a big deal, but the NCAA made it a bigger deal than
now,
what it needed to be.
So now I'm accusing Kentucky and their mm-hmm. tournament organizers of cheating Indiana.
No, yeah.
By doing that.
Sounds like a total mess.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I don't know. You can't trust UK.
But I think we need to make our picks. I think we need to pick a winner.
Well, now, so far, everybody that we've picked has been losing.
Right,
so.
But I think we need to now pick a winner now that they
okay,
are
okay, now that it's
in,
serious,
that
we
it
pick
is
a winner.
Set. Yes.
Okay. Man, my brain is telling me LSU. My heart is telling me anybody but Wake Forest, and the other part of my heart is saying TCU. So I'm going to go with Hypnotoad on this one, and TCU takes us home. We just cannot have Wake Forest win a championship in any sport.
Travis, what about you?
So you're telling me that Indiana is eliminated.
Yeah, unfortunately, they didn't make
Indiana
it.
Indiana State is gone.
Indiana State is eliminated.
Yeah, Ball State didn't make the cut either.
Ball State is eliminated. Mm-hmm. Vanderbilt is eliminated.
Oh, yeah, they're gone.
Kentucky is eliminated.
Well, I wouldn't.
I'm kidding.
I wouldn't pick Kentucky if they were playing the Islamic State. So,
Oh, my Lord.
Oh.
Roy Hobbs, where have you gone?
I am going to take, God, I can't take Tennessee either.
I'm going to say this.
I'm going to take Texas Christian too. I'm going to go two for two, okay. And I'm going to take TCU to win the whole thing.
Hypnotoad. All right, what you got, Frederick?
Well, I thought he was going to take Oral Roberts, but
I'm surprised he didn't.
But now that Dallas... they're out of it. Dallas Baptist is out of it.
Yeah.
No,
we're only down to two religious schools.
We got a couple of good buddies that have moved in town from Baton Rouge into Louisville. There is now a purple and gold. Is that their colors? Purple and gold, lavender and gold.
Yeah.
They have moved into town, and I am going to pull for them because they are baseball guys. They're big Cubs fans. I am pulling for the LSU Tigers to win it all.
I like that pick. And if you haven't seen it yet, LSU's catcher, he's got a weird name, Trivolewski or Trivol. I feel stupid for missing out on this, but I'm pretty sure he's Gardner Minshew.
You mentioned that the other night, and I went back and looked at
him. They're the exact same human being.
He does look exactly like him.
Hayden Travitsky is his name. So, yeah, which sounds like a made-up name. If I was Gardner Minshew and I wanted to play college baseball and I was making a name up to do it, I would go with Hayden Travitsky.
Does that mean he looks like Doc Holliday? Or
he looks like Gardner Minshew. It's not curly. It's just it's a lady slaying mustache.
Okay.
So that's the only way to put it. But he's been hitting a ton lately, and
you gotta love a catcher that gets a lot of hits,
gets
a lot of action.
Yep, Johnny's told me that he kind of came in late in the year and wasn't even a full time starter, and then like they put him in, and he's been crushing the ball ever since.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah, LSU's definitely a fun team. Smart money would say LSU or Wake Forest is probably the teams to get. And I'm basing that solely on pitching. And Wake Forest has some hitters, man. They've got two of the top five hitters in all of college baseball, along with those two pitchers. Was it Rhett Lauder? But I forget the other guy's name.
Right.
But it's going to be tough, man. If you can get them in a three-day series is going to be a nightmare. You're going to have to – Wake Forest in the double elimination knockout round.
Am I thinking of a different team, or didn't LSU lose all their pitchers or something to injury, and they have like they're using like their?
I don't know about that.
Maybe I'm reading into that wrong, but I thought that I overheard someone discussing that during one of the games.
I mean, it may be. I'm just not.
They're like down to like nobody, and they're still dominating.
Well,
not dominating, but playing well.
Speaking of baseball,
I
thought we might want to talk about the eruption
like a volcano
of America's team. The Cincinnati Reds. Freddie.
Oh, baby.
Man, this last 2 weeks has been unbelievable as a Reds fan. And for me, coming from a place where I became cognizant of the Reds in about probably 1981 or something, 81, 82, when they were just past the days of the Big Red Machine. And then having been a huge fan in 1990 when they won the World Series, and then 2010, and 11, like 10, 11, 12 was pretty good. But, man, we have not been this excited about the Red Legs in a long time. Have you seen what they've done the last couple of weeks? And, you know, they're only about a game, maybe a game and a half outside of first place.
They're a game and a half as of today.
Yeah, game and a half. 22 comeback wins this year. Third in the major leagues.
Because good teams don't have to come back.
15-8 on the road since April 28th. They've won 10 of their last 12 road games. They did beat the take the Royals down. Not that that's saying anything, but...
But you still have to play
a lot
well.
The three big words: youth, aggressiveness, grinding. Let's make it four, and fun. I think those are four words that are into this Reds team. Like our leaders are probably 28 years old. A couple of our leaders, Tuna loves. We all love him. I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm a big McLain fan. I love him. Of course, everyone's on De La Cruz. Fairchild is playing great. Herrera, we've got some issues in the field.
Steer had four errors the other night.
Oh,
how many?
God, we had six last night.
I just want to say that was the oddest box score I think
it
that
was
I'd
very
ever seen.
Last night's game was insane. It was the weirdest game.
What was it? 15 hits?
Yeah, they had the Royals had
15 hits, and you guys had four errors. And what'd you win?
We had three home runs and four at bats at one point. And then the Royals just started going off, and we on errors. I'm talking like a couple of them were real bad errors. Like I know Herrera, I call him Rero.
Herrera?
Yeah, Guerrero. Herrera.
It's with a B, isn't
yeah,
it?
No, it's with an H. Herrera is learning how to play. He was a shortstop. He's learning how to play the outfield.
Well, they ought to bring him down here to Louisville so he can figure it out.
Well, they need to because some of the plays that he was making are way off. But I'm not talking negative, baby. We're talking positive. I am so excited. Who's your guy, Tuna?
No, I think Matt McLain and TJ Friedl.
TJ Friedl, who's just sat out last night. Yeah. He took a break, but
those are the root of that team.
Right.
I think
they're the leaders, along with.
I'm not going to say Ellie De La Cruz is up there yet. He's got a lot of growing up to do, and you can tell that so far.
Let me tell you this: Steer has been unbelievable.
Love Steer,
and he is. He's a dynamite player for them, and I think he's right now. He's kind of the straw that stirs the drink.
Right.
Well,
Matt, what's great about that is I think it's McLain and Tuna thinks it's TJ. So when you have three different people with three different opinions on who's stirring the drink, that means you're doing something right. We haven't even gotten to the pitchers. Which, you know, that could go either way. That's always worrisome. But I feel like the pitchers are jumping on that mojo train and really starting to put things together with confidence based on knowing that they have the hitting. Think about the Reds. When they were down, say, the last few years, 6-1, 6-2, you know that game's over.
Of course.
And now the pitchers know that game is nowhere near over. And that is, as Tuna knows, being a Dodger fan, that's big boy baseball. And it's going to take us a while. We're not there yet, but it is exciting.
I have a confession to make, and this is not going to be popular amongst you guys. I don't like it when the Reds are successful. and I'm going to explain this.
Or the Bengals.
Well, yeah. Not necessarily the Bengals. That's one thing. But the Reds more so because summertime is the quiet time in the city of Louisville. That's where I can watch my baseball without having to listen to too much and all this. And all these, like, people will tell me all summer long how much they hate the game of baseball, how terrible it is, it's boring, it's dying, it's a dead sport, and I'm happy with it. Just mind your business, do what you do, go to the zoo, go to Kentucky Kingdom, stay out of my lane, and let me enjoy my baseball games. And then when the Reds start doing good, this whole city all of a sudden turns into a big red machine, and they start loving it. And you can't do anything without hearing about, how about them Reds? What about them Reds? How about them Red Legs? Do you remember, like, how much your owner hates you guys as fans?
Yes, we know.
And speaking of that, let's talk about the A's here in a minute. But your owner was like, hey, you don't have to come to the games. I'll leave. We'll leave this town.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Dude, while we're winning, his office lights are off.
Yeah.
He doesn't like the light. He's the judge.
Tuna, I can't imagine, being a fan of the Reds and really getting upset about someone that will leave a beloved town where the entire neighborhood subscribes to, dealing with that team and loving that team as much as the Dodgers. Yeah, I mean, they would never do anything like that, ever.
We kept the name to honor the folks in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Ask those people.
Yeah, ask Mari Wills
how they feel about that.
This is before my time, guys, so I don't even remember what happened. Were the Dodgers part of Brooklyn? I didn't even know.
I'm going to have my dad on the podcast next week maybe to talk about that.
Yeah, we can only get Pee-wee Reese back.
Hey, Vin Scully went with him, so, you got that. I'm with you, but, like, the Reds they are a fun little team, and they're for the longest time.
Didn't he say the Bengals were a fun little team?
Just a fun little team.
Right until he had to run out of the garage bar to try to get a victory.
Which we did.
Oh, my God.
I left that garage bar and secured the bag.
Cincinnati's an up-and-coming town. Big time, baby.
No, football's one thing. The Bengals, they're good and everything. And the Reds, it's just... The thing is like all these fans around here are going to get so excited and half this team's going to be gone in a year and you're
going to
be disappointed again and we're going to go through this again and it's just nonstop, but back to the zoo.
Hey, Joey Votto, chill out. Hey, here's the thing. Speaking of Joey Votto, every Reds fan that is listening to this telecast right now is going, I'm not quite sure if we want Joey Votto to come back and screw all this up. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's what they don't want to say.
Sure.
But we love Joey. He's given his heart and soul for the Reds. But I do believe that veteran that is kind of still with the team and trying to get back, that's the one thing that I hope doesn't screw this team. I hope he takes a back seat and enjoys the exuberance going on and lets these guys take over the team.
So with this late surge, are you guys going to be buyers at the deadline?
That is a very interesting question.
Huge question, because I've never seen it.
Well, I'll tell you the answer. No. No. I mean, it's just that simple.
Hey, Tuna. I can turn your microphone off right here with a press of one button.
I know this hurts.
I mean, I can turn it off.
I know this hurts, but I'm just
turn it off.
Being truthful right now. And it sucks. I feel bad for you guys, just like I feel bad for A's fans. But I don't understand what the A's fans are doing with this reverse boycott. Have you guys heard about this?
Wait a minute.
I did hear about that.
And don't
that.
Forget, didn't I they, did hear didn't about they that. Have, aren't, isn't this the team that had the squirrel?
the possum.
The possum.
That has taken over the, broadcast booth.
Yes, the squirrel or possum has taken over the broadcast booth. And now.
So fans are now showing up and selling out the stadium and saying, hey, we show up to games. We want, why are you leaving this city? And it's a little too late. A's fans, don't get me wrong, I hate seeing Oakland leave Oakland. Like, that's an iconic team that I grew up with. You know what I mean?
We all did, yeah.
Yeah, we all did. And it sucks that they're going to be in Vegas.
I think if
but now you're showing up every day, and all you're doing is giving this owner that you hate more money in his pocket. Like, that makes no sense. Explain that to me, because maybe I'm looking at it differently than what I should be.
Well, I mean, I think it was a one-day thing, right?
I think it's lasted three, or it's going three. Maybe I'm wrong there.
I thought it was a one-day thing where they just said, we're just going to show our support, and they know it's a foregone conclusion that team's leaving. But I think that they just wanted to say, we love this squad. We love this ball club. And, you know, it's just, we know that they're going to leave, but this is our last chance to say we love this. We love this
team.
So
what I'll buy is saying, hey, we love this team and we support this team. What we don't support is our owner, and he is the only reason that we don't come to games. Now, if that was the excuse, then I'd be like, okay, I get that. But there's been years that stadium has been desolate. Like, you just,
you're right.
They've kind of done that to themselves, even though they were probably going to leave anyway at some point. But
I don't know.
It just seems a little too late for that to happen. And now just going to all the games just kind of sounds like a bad idea to me. But anyway.
Well, I'm not quite sure. But I do think that we need to talk about the Nuggets.
That was probably the roughest transition I've ever heard.
And
we're going all terrain vehicle from one topic to the next. I love baseball, but we have nothing to add there. Let's go Nuggets.
We're talking about the Athletics coming back to town in Oakland, and before midseason, we're in big trouble, Birdsong.
And that was a relatively difficult transition. But
it was the possum that got me.
But
now that we're here,
we do have a couple of guys over here that I think picked the Nuggets to win the NBA championship at the beginning of the playoffs. I think I had them losing in the finals to the Celtics, I think.
If only
but
we
I had
money
them winning
on.
The West.
No, you had them winning it all, didn't you?
Honestly, I don't remember.
I think you did.
I thought we all had the Nuggets.
We all had the Nuggets winning it all. You had Boston in the finals instead of the Heat.
Yeah.
But, man.
And none of us bet on the Nuggets at all.
The Nuggets.
I guess the money wasn't good.
No.
Were amazing in this NBA playoffs. The Heat played their brains out. And I don't think anybody can take anything away from them.
Right.
But, what did you guys think about the way that the NBA playoffs finished out, and especially the final game?
I thought the playoffs as a whole was awesome. The finals was a bit of a disappointment.
I agree.
But all in all, we kind of knew it was going to happen. And, you know, hats off to the Heat, man. They laid it out there. They gave everything they had. And it just would.
They played so hard, but they just didn't have the talent to match up.
No, the Nuggets were a wagon.
And the Nuggets were sitting there waiting for them. On top of that, so they were well rested. I mean, I tell you what, that coach for the Nuggets, God, that guy. I mean, I don't know if
I'm pretty
like
sure
any other coach.
Today.
I mean, that guy is such a grinder, and I love everything that he says. And he's such a motivator. And hey, not to mention Spoelstra's the same way. They are both on top of their game right now, those two coaches. But he's such a lifer and a guy that's you could tell when he was shaking hands with the other players when they won the West before they even came to the finals, how much those players came and hugged him. That just other players respect that guy so much. They know what he's given. And I love that the Nuggets stuck with him. And I think that's the biggest thing that that guy takes away from this championship is that they stuck with him. They organized that team together. They got the parts and pieces. Dude, this is an old-school NBA win. This is an old school. I mean, this isn't a team of great people.
Super
that
team.
All, right,
it's not
no
a super,
super
team.
Team. And you've got to love that. Like the Aaron Gordons, who, let me tell you something, Aaron Gordon's one of them players that could have probably averaged more points and rebounds, but he ended up being the scrapper of the team, the defensive guy. You know, I really do believe it. And what about Brown, the unsung hero
right.
that he was that played great? All these guys. What about Jeff Green? You know, only missed one shot in the finals, even though he only took 10. But, dude, like these guys, like you had to love this team. You had to be pulling for this team. Like, Joker deserves a ring. Jamal Murray deserves a ring after what he did during that
right.
COVID year. And then he got hurt. What did he average in that COVID year? Remember, he averaged like 36 a game?
Right.
And then he, I mean, these guys really deserve, and I didn't even know Jamal Murray was that much of a charismatic guy. But he really, when you hear his interviews after the game, he is one charismatic kid that I never knew he even had at Kentucky or anything. And I just thought it was really cool. And they deserve it. And hey, kudos to the Nuggets and all the past players, Mutombo, Alex English, Travis. Can we name some more? Fat Lever.
Alex English is one of my favorite NBA players of
yes,
all time.
Yes,
so.
Yes. Just past great Mahmoud Abdul Rauf.
Of course. Going way back, Dan Issel,
Don Nelson,
right?
Just great, great. The whole Nugget regime has always been cool. Back in the day, great jerseys, and I just think it's cool that they won. Never won an ABA championship, nothing. So a first time champion. For a team that's been there for a long time.
Plus, Michael Malone was pounding fireball shots for his speech today.
Dude,
it was kind of awesome.
Dude, I love that guy. Yeah. I mean, you have to love that guy. And, dude, newsflash, they're going to be around for a while.
They are. I mean, I can't imagine that anything's going to change with that because, as you said, they're not a super team where they have to pay a bunch of guys, a bunch of money to keep that team together.
They
right?
all know the roles. I mean, let me ask you a question. Is Jamal Murray now a first all-NBA first teamer? I mean, who's going to hold that guy back if he doesn't get injured with the confidence he has now? I mean, geez. I mean, that guy can find an average 10 assists in the 26 and 10 and like what, 5 rebounds. That's freaking sick numbers along
right.
with Jokic. Like, it's pretty unbelievable that if he doesn't get hurt again, the guy can find his shot when they need someone who can get a shot off. And Joker's, you know, doing his thing in the paint or somewhere. You know Jamal Murray can get his shot off when they need one. So,
right.
Man, I'm telling you, they're going to be scary moving forward. And the West is a little, you know, I think the Steph and them are going to be breaking away. Probably the demise of the Golden State And all these teams are trying to get super teams together. And while they're doing it, they're going to be winning.
Right. Did you guys happen to watch any of the NHL, the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah, and other than, what was it, game three, it was probably one of the most boringest Stanley Cup playoffs that I've seen. So we kind of got screwed on the NBA and NHL playoffs this time around. And I'd love to break a lot of that NHL Stanley Cup down, but reality is I was asleep during most of it, so... sorry. That's what I got there. But congrats to Vegas, though. I mean, that's awesome.
Dude, I mean, what? They've been in existence for what, like 6 years?
Yeah, if that, right? If that, yeah.
And now they're world champions. And I mean, that's really cool.
And that, it seems, doesn't it seem, is it me or does that seem like that happens in hockey more than any other sport?
I'd be lying if I said I knew the rules of expansion and how that works and like how they.
But the Florida Panthers have been champions and they haven't been around there.
Look at the Kraken.
And
this is what, their second year, and they were competing right here late in the
season. What about Teemu Selänne and all them?
Are those words?
Well, that's a player.
Okay.
Paul Kariya, the Mighty Ducks. I mean, like, you can bring up all kinds of teams.
You talking about Goldberg?
And I almost feel like, guys out there
Gordon Bombay.
Guys out there in Canada listening to me that want to punch me in the face. Like, is it me or has, like, Calgary or Winnipeg or someone not won forever? The diehards that have been there through the grinds. And am I wrong about that? Because I'm not claiming to know this.
Well, I think the United States has just taken over hockey from Canada.
But, dude, I almost feel like from here on out, I'm pulling for those diehard Saskatchewans.
Are you talking about the original six? Blackhawks or the Bruins were the last.
Well, the Bruins
of the original
have won.
Six.
They
to
have,
win?
But they have won it not long ago. I'm talking about the diehard Canadian teams. Mm-hmm. Even the Canadians have won.
Me talking about hockey is like me talking about horse racing. So I don't really know a whole lot about what's going on.
And SEC football, but yeah.
oh my God.
No, but I'm not kidding. Like, Ottawa and Winnipeg seem like they've been there since Chris Berman started ESPN.
Uh-huh.
And I've never heard them win a championship. And
well,
I'm
how long has it been? It's been
guys.
Something forever since a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup, right?
Like, I mean, I'm not sure, but I'm going to tell you right now, moving forward, that is who is my team. Like, I'm pulling for a...
Saskatchewan?
No, not they are not a team. They are not a team.
Well, maybe that's their problem.
City.
If
they're
they had a team, they'd probably win it.
Just so you know, I'm not a history or a geography buff, but they are a province.
1993, Montreal Canadiens was the last.
That's
time.
What I said. Yeah, the Canadiens are the last team to win, and I can tell you that I don't think any of those diehard old school teams have won in forever.
Well, I know. Wasn't this the first series or first playoff game first playoff series, I guess, that the Toronto Maple Leafs won was this year?
There you go.
Yeah.
Right. But I feel like the Maple Leafs have been way better than Winnipeg and Ottawa.
Well, they're kind of supposed to be the Dallas Cowboys of the NHL, correct? In Canada? Like,
that's
Toronto
right.
is like
that's
Canada's
right.
team
right.
and so on.
But I think that I'm starting to get some fans, I think. Freddie Benders is getting some fans from Ottawa and Winnipeg going, "You're damn right, we ain't won nothing, and we want you on our bandwagon from here on out." Because I'm telling you.
Well, let's take the show on a Canadian tour and get them on your bandwagon.
Let's
go. I would love to do
let's
that.
Let's go. But, hey, thanks for the
you're going to speak French, seeing how you look like a Frenchman. So you're going to order my food all week.
I'm glad that we got that hockey in there.
Awesome. And, guys, let's kind of start putting a bow on this episode.
Hey,
by...
can I say one more thing real
sure.
quick? One thing that we missed about – have we talked U.S. Open yet?
Not
really.
To a certain extent, but
okay.
But
I don't remember, yeah.
I don't think we have.
I was going to get into something else quickly.
Oh, okay, because I had a question about the U.S. Open.
Sure. We do have this United States-Mexico game going on behind us right now. The score is 0-0.
It is a match.
Us true soccer fans know that.
37th minute.
God, there's a lot
here.
Of hate out there on the pitch. Oh, goal!
Christian Pulisic.
And that is
USA.
They would call a viral moment here.
Wow, and Freddie called
cool
it. Damn.
That?
I'm so pumped.
You
what a
called
shot.
It after the ball went in the goal. You said goal after it went in.
I said it
you
as
didn't
it was
predict
going
that.
In. Yeah, no, I didn't predict it, but I got to say Christian Pulisic. Like, I'm so.
Are they pulling it back? They're pulling it back?
No, they're not.
In true kickball fashion, something different.
I think he celebrated too
much.
Oh,
it's Little Rainier.
I think it's
Little Rainier's out there.
Excessive celebration. Yeah, he has blonde hair.
All right.
Watch this.
The people listening, they can't watch this.
Well, look, Rainier mishit the ball totally. It was it could be offsides. It could be offsides here. Look at 20 right there. He might be offsides. See him right there? He's offsides.
Yeah, but he didn't touch the ball.
No, well, it doesn't matter. He don't have to. If he touches it, he's not offsides. The mere fact that he didn't touch it, he probably is offsides.
Yay.
But that was so cool, and they counted it.
All right.
That's a goal, guys. Hey, we're up 1-0 in the greatest rivalry in America, soccer, in American soccer.
Tuna, did you even know that the United States and Mexico plays these type of games from time to time?
Somebody told me about the history of it and that there was a documentary on Amazon that I should watch, and I have yet to been able to find time to get to that. So I've been busy. I watched American Gladiators 30 for 30 for the 18th time, so I haven't had time to get to
this. Did you watch the Bill Walton?
No. All right.
Part
explain
one
this
and
to
part
me.
Two.
Why does there have to be four parts to a Bill Walton documentary?
Because he's one of the greatest basketball players that ever lived.
But can we not put that, like, all these documentaries, you used to be able to make an hour and a half to 2 hour long documentary. Now everything is like six parts or four parts.
No,
this
you're
is a little
right.
Overdrawn,
the Jordan,
man.
The Jordan thing, the Derek Jeter thing.
Like,
I get
I think Tom Brady's Man in an Arena was like 24 episodes.
Tom Brady,
I mean, what the hell?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I get it. And Derek Jeter, he's probably got like, I don't know, an entire year's worth of shows.
Yeah.
So Bill Walton's great, and I love him. And I honestly love listening to him call Pac-12 games. I don't remember him watching play or remember watching him play basketball much because it was a little bit ahead of me. But I feel like that's a lot of TV time for Bill Walton.
He's one of the greatest winners of all time.
I mean, I'm going to watch it.
And
but
he's also a guy that I think, Tuna, somebody like you that doesn't understand the greatness that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And not just that, but he was such a different guy off the court.
He was a big social.
I'll tell you what, Tuna. If you get bored with his story after two episodes, just turn it off.
Yeah, that's usually what I do. by the fourth hour of watching something on person, I start to dislike that person after a while.
But you have to admit, correct me if I'm wrong, and I haven't looked at my Bill Walton history, but he was one of the greatest winners of all time in college.
Of course.
And also at the same time made a stand against the Vietnam War.
He did.
A huge stand. Like, he was,
and
went
it was
to
a
jail.
Big deal. It was a big deal, but he didn't go to jail. But
no, he did go to jail one time. He was arrested on campus.
He
might have
been
jail.
Arrested for, but he didn't go to jail because.
No, he went to jail because he was a.
Right.
Yeah.
Just
yeah, he was
protesting.
There protesting or right. whatever. But the other thing was, is then he goes on to the pros and wins a championship, Injured.
I think you're missing my point on this. Like, I wasn't degrading Bill Walton by saying that's too much for that. I'm saying this is a trend that's happening with documentaries.
Oh, no, like, I get it.
Like, it's almost becoming too much.
I just thought you didn't like redheads.
And that's just maybe me being a grumpy old bastard. I don't know, man.
This was a weird 30 for 30 that was a part one and two. Not many 30 for 30s are part one, part two. Mm. Now, all these things that these players are doing themselves, like Jordan, like Jeter, like Tom Brady, those are things that correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they are highly involved in that. In that documentary.
Yes, they are.
And that is why they want to make sure you don't miss nothing. Mm-hmm. And they're getting a little bit from here, from there. This was a random 30 for 30 that was part one, part two. Kind of like the Miami Hurricanes. I didn't need a part one and part two for a Miami Hurricane team that choked in 1993 to Alabama. Like, I didn't need part one, part two.
That was, theoretically, I'm going to explain why you, or to you, see, I'm going to disagree with you on this one.
I mean,
there was a reason for a part one and a part two on that. It was because the U went down after that first stint, and it was the build back up with Butch Davis. You know what I mean?
I guess they never won.
And I would say that the reason for this with Walton is because he is the... maybe one of the greatest college basketball players of all times, goes into the NBA, is one of the most dominant NBA players of all time.
Hurt.
And then gets hurt, and then comes back as sixth man of the year, I believe in 86.
For the Celtics.
And helps the Celtics win another championship. And then it's all the off-court stuff and
Grateful Dead
and the kind of the dichotomy between Walton and who is his idol and, you know, his mentor is John Wooden. And so you have kind of this guy that's the opposite of Wooden, right?
Oh, I mean, to a level that I don't think, to the extreme level that I'm not sure that anyone's ever gotten.
But, man, like they loved each other. He loves him. He credits him with so much of his success. But they couldn't be more different from a, you know, a political standpoint or a social standpoint or anything like that.
I think... the point that I was trying to make was like how you go from like watching these hour long documentaries, like A Football Life, where you get an hour on Barry Sanders, you get an hour on such and such, or, you know, Emmett Smith, Walter Payton. And then like all of a sudden somebody comes along and everything now that you turn on has at least 3 to 4 parts to it. And it's like, it's a lot of TV to consume, man.
It
like,
is. At least,
yeah, but man, How can you say that you can distill Walter Payton's life down to an hour? I mean, I want to see 2 or 3 hours on that, personally.
Okay, well, I'll throw my hands up and I'll surrender, because if there's viewers out there that want to watch all 4 episodes and enjoy every bit of it, then there's people and there's an audience for it, and continue doing what you're doing. So, cheers. You guys win that argument. It's just not for me, I'll say that. It's... if there's viewers, then by God, consume it.
Well, I know what I'm going to consume all weekend.
Yes.
And what would that be?
The U.S. Open.
Bunch of
Fred.
Champagne and high noons.
Speaking
probably.
Of Bill Walton, he would be proud as hell where the U.S. Open is right now. We slide right into Los Angeles Country Club.
And it's funny because Tuna and I were talking earlier tonight.
You all right, Tuna?
Yeah, why? All
right.
Before we...
why'd you ask that?
You're just a little fired up.
Am I fired up?
A little bit.
Before we started recording tonight, Tuna and I were talking about the U.S. Open, and I mentioned that I thought that this course reminded me of, like, when I was a kid, like Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson and... those guys playing. I mean, you know, it's a kind of a unmanicured around the sand traps and things like that. And Tuna was saying that he didn't find anything necessarily exciting about this course. And I find that interesting because I think
that misquoted.
I think that some of this might be our generation difference. And the fact that I grew up watching U.S. Opens that were played on courses like this, I said, it looks like Pebble Beach used to be in the early 80s.
Right, like this is a Bermuda grass rough.
And that...
that is kind of unheard of.
That barranca in between and the greens that turn yellow at night and stuff.
Right. Wide fairways.
Now, we had two guys shoot 62 today, which is
unbelievable.
Incredible.
Was that Dr. Wu? Or no.
Dylan Wu?
Tuna, why don't you give me your thoughts on the U.S. Open? I'm curious for the listeners to hear it.
It wasn't there was nothing exciting about this course, because there's tons of exciting stuff on this course. I said on television, it's not aesthetically pleasing, which with Pebble Beach, you have the ocean, you have the rocks, you have the views and everything. This, I'm getting some hotel in Bel Air in the backdrop.
It is
and
weird. Like, there's it's like really, a Golden Tee game.
Just, there's nothing about it. And Travis even made this quote earlier. It reminded him of watching golf before HD existed. And I couldn't agree more with
and
that.
That's true.
It is. Yeah, it's a total strange setup all around.
One of my favorite things about watching golf is the beauty of the course and all the character that the course will bring throughout, and like the landscape, the architecture of the course and everything that goes in. And with this, it's just, and this is just my personal opinion, it's just not aesthetically pleasing to my particular eye. But as far as the play itself, first of all, I feel like they should just eliminate all holes and make them play the sixth hole 18 times. Because that hole is a nightmare. And watching every guy's approach to that hole has been – because they all have different ways that they're attacking
it. You want to.
And I would love to be just like a fly on the green – out there watching these caddies the night before, all out there trying to study, how they're going to come into this. Right. And I don't know. I think that's fascinating.
I would either hang there at the number 15, the 80-yard par 3 there, too.
Yeah.
Which is, and then the
wasn't
other
it like
par 3s 70, are long
77,
as hell.
I believe.
Yeah, it was like 77 yards. Yeah.
And then you've got the other par 3s that are long as hell. Dude, it is a... this course has a bit of everything,
it does.
If you will.
It does. And
I know what you're saying from a television aspect.
But that's not going to prevent me from watching it. Like, I'm going to watch the golf and the quality of golf, enjoy every second.
Especially when it goes till 10 o'clock.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another thing I love. I kind of wish that almost every big golf event was played on the West Coast, because it's really kind of awesome.
I was listening to the radio coverage when I was on my way home tonight, and they were talking about that, and then they mentioned the fact that I think it's going to be on the East Coast, or at least in the Eastern time zone, like the next 2 or 3 years, and I thought, man, it's so much fun to be able to, we're watching it right now, or it just finished, at 9 o'clock, like we get to watch big time major golf at 9 o'clock at night. And I always think that is super cool.
Well, I mean, there's nothing better. I mean,
yeah, man,
I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, you can be like, honey, Sunday's Father's Day. Where do I want to be? I'm at my local pub with all the guys, and we're going to watch golf till 9 at night. I mean, does it get better than that when you're an East Coaster, so used to tournaments ending at 6:30 p.m., and then 60 Minutes comes on?
Mm-hmm.
Tick, 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 tick.
Oh, it's the worst
like,
sound
I
in
gotta
the world.
Work.
Nothing creates
I gotta
more
work
anxiety
in the morning.
Than that sound.
Oh, Jesus, I got to do my homework.
Yeah.
What in the hell is that? But on top of that, I will say this, and I'm not sure if y'all have read about this, but there's a big, big deal going on with NBC and how people last year were irate with the, including the president of the of the U.S. Beast, whatever, that were so mad that there were so many commercials that cut in to the golf that was going on during the U.S. Open. And I want to let it be known that they did something about it. And there are 30% fewer commercials that will be shown during this telecast this weekend of commercials from NBC. It was a big deal. Like, a lot of, I mean, you wouldn't believe all the bad feedback that they got. And I'm talking from people that were on the board and everything. And they, you know, they took it in. They made it happen. So hopefully there won't be tons of commercial breaks. And based on sponsorship, they're like, we're still going to make a ton of money. It's all good.
Oh, of course.
But they were like, there's got to be something we can do about it. And thank God they did. I'm not a fan of NBC doing golf, but I'm more of a Jim Nance guy.
Oh, we love but, Jim Nance.
I will say that at least as long as they're cutting out the commercials, I can handle anything.
I thought the coverage today was pretty good, and I think Terry Gannon is very good.
He's great.
Kind of the host.
Tuna, do you know who Terry Gannon is?
Yes, I do.
Who is he?
He was well today. I don't know. He hosted the golf today. What did he do in his life that I should know about?
Travis, tell him.
I'm sure I'm about to get lectured. What did he do?
He was
enough to make an 8-part documentary series about him.
Well, he was one of the guards on the 1983 NC State Wolfpack team that won the national championship.
Okay, I had no idea.
Well,
we've
actually spoken about this on this podcast.
Yeah, well, I space
because,
out a lot
because
he was thinking of a one-liner.
I didn't realize
counting Super Bowl rings.
I didn't realize that it was the same Terry Gannon until I saw the 30 for 30 about the 83 Wolfpack, and I was like,
Freddie knew.
How do I know that guy? And I was like, oh my God. I thought that he was like there to interview the team. I didn't realize he was one of the starting guards.
He was pretty good too.
Hmm.
I think he was all conference. But moving forward, Travis, he is really good and getting better.
Yeah,
by the way.
I think he's really good
for NBC.
And while we're on the US Open, Tuna, I'm gonna throw it to you. I'm gonna put you on the spot right now.
Mm-hmm.
Who wins the US Open and what do you think the winning shot total will be?
I'm going to go with a long shot here and say Sam Bennett, the young kid who just came up from being an amateur and is actually mm-hmm. pro now. Everybody remembers him from the Masters
yes.
where he finished, was it 16th, tied for
16th? Played great.
And
really cool
he had a good day today. If he can keep it calm, I like for him to work his way up the board. I feel like Xander Schauffele is going to choke at some point, and I would love
to
see Ricky Fowler hold on to that because I love Ricky Fowler.
Let's go, Ricky!
I would too.
But I'm going to say Sam Bennett in a stunner wins this with a -9 for the tournament.
Fred.
Well, just in case anyone knows, I put a little money on one person before my Wi-Fi went out, and that's a long story. But I have money on Morikawa because
he's
played this course, and he didn't play that well today. Travis and I have some push for Cameron Smith. LIV, but
it's all one now.
It's all one now. Cameron Smith,
watching
Justin
Brooks
Rose,
and Rory chuck it up today, walking down the fairway.
Phil
was fun.
Played well today, but I'm going to tell you, I am going to be the. I mean, let me tell you, I don't know who on the planet would not be pulling for Ricky Fowler if he were to win?
No doubt.
And, I mean, dude, the kid's so cool. He doesn't whine and bitch that he hasn't been playing well and that he changed his swing and this, that, and the other.
And one of the best SportsCenter commercials ever made.
Well, dude, he's one of the Brat Pack, and you never hear anything where he's trying to get. He's always there to shake someone's hand when they win at the end. He was an ex-gamer. I mean, he's an athlete in other sports. Like, come on, dude. Who don't think Ricky Fowler's one of the coolest mofos in the game? He is cooler than the other side of the pillow, as Stuart Scott would say. For real.
That's right. And Outkast.
But I am going to say that Dustin Johnson wins the U.S. Open. I think he's -3 right now.
He's -6 right now.
-6.
Well, he's already won life.
And he was -3 when I saw it, so now I'm really pumped up. But I think he's going to win it, and I think he's going to be -8.
All right. I love that. I am going to take, as I typically do every week, I'm going to take Rory this week. And I'm going to say that the winning score, now Rory is -5. He tees off at 11:24 tomorrow.
He's got the eye of the tiger right now.
I'm going to say that Rory ends up -11.
Ooh.
And -11 is the winning score. Fellas, before we get out of here, I want to throw it around the room quickly. Tuna, do you have anything to add here at the end of the episode?
Yeah, two things real quick. DeAndre Hopkins had a meeting today with the New England Patriots, and if you step back and look at it, that marriage makes perfect sense to me.
It does.
And Belichick has been clamoring to get a top wide receiver. He hasn't had one since really Randy Moss. And I think that we could, if that happens, we could really see Mac Jones grow a lot as a wide receiver. And especially with the new offensive coordinator up there who Freddie seems to know really well. And also Netflix, released a trailer for a series, called Quarterback, where it focuses on following, three quarterbacks in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, Kirk Cousins, and Marcus Mariota, which is an odd mix of people. So you have Patrick Mahomes, who's at the top of his game, Marcus Mariota, who's struggling to keep a starting job in the NFL, and some guy in Minnesota that loves to square dance. And I'm not really sure where this is going to go.
I guess Joe Burrow is in the Bahamas.
It could be good. And I'm going to pass it on to Frederick.
Well, I have a couple things.
Please.
Number one, while we were still kind of on golf, did you all find it strange that Jay Monahan was ill? Did y'all, I mean, I just want to get y'all's opinion.
I don't
on
pay
that.
Anything or any did attention not, to what Jay Monahan does anymore
but
or
did
says.
Did y'all not find that strange that was just a weird, I'm not saying that it happened when it happened, but it is very strange that just out of the blue, I'm watching live at the U.S. Open last night, and it's day before yesterday or whatever, and it comes out that he is ill, and I don't know, the way players talk about it doesn't sound like it was just like a routine a tooth extraction that he had.
Well,
it was like,
don't you think that he's been under an unbelievable amount of stress?
Mm-hmm. And totally.
I think I mentioned on our text thread last night, if you remember what happened to Bart Giamatti when he was investigating he was in kind of in charge of when Pete Rose was being investigated. I don't think people that are of a certain age realize what an unbelievably big story that was when Pete Rose was being investigated. And Bart Giamatti died of a heart attack basically right in the middle of that whole investigation. And obviously, I'm not saying that that's the same thing that happened with Moynihan or anything like
that.
But, but I do think that there's probably something to the fact that he's been under so much stress and pressure that, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he didn't need a little bit of time to get away.
So you don't think he was poisoned?
No, I don't know. I don't think he was poisoned.
Possibility.
Oh my
hey,
God.
Hey, man, these sliders are great. Come on over.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Anyways, no. Hey, best of health to Jay Monahan. Hope he gets back and is able to watch the U.S. Open and gets back in good health. I do want to give a shout-out to the Manchester City. Manchester City, Country Matt, Tuna, did you not know who won? Who is the UEFA club champions of the world?
Manchester City.
Manchester City. They won 1-0. Yeah. You know what nil means?
Yeah,
zero.
It means nothing.
They won 1-0 over Inter
Milan.
And, Inter Milan. but they won 1-0.
Didn't they beat Inter Milan?
In a great match that was a defensive battle. The goalkeeper played spectacular. I've
Congrats.
Never seen so many saves in my life. But they got the treble. Do you know what the treble is, Tuna?
No, I'm looking forward
the
to
the treble
telling
is
me.
The you win it. It's only happened in 1999 by Manchester United. They won the FA Cup, the Premiership, and the Champions League. All three. That is called the treble, and that is pretty strong when you do something like that.
Good stuff.
Kudos to Manchester City.
Hooray.
Fred, is that it?
That's it for Fred.
Oh, my goodness.
Good to be back.
Well, we are really glad to have you back, and we're obviously always grateful for all of our listeners each and every week. We hope that you will reach out to us on social media. Give us a like, give us a 5-star review on wherever you listen to your particular podcasts. I think tonight has been really fun. We have a lot of stuff to look forward to this weekend. And,
that guy was dressed like a chimichurri.
That was this rivalry is dirty.
Because a guy was dressed like
I don't know,
tamale?
But I want to know why this robbery is so dirty.
We'll watch a video, and it'll explain
I'm going to watch a documentary.
I am going to have to go double time on editing this week's podcast.
Nah, let it ride.
But
let it ride.
We look forward to next week where we'll be back with you. Thank you all for listening so much. For the big fellow, the Tuna Country, Matt Kemp. And the fabulous one, Freddie Benders. This is Travis Carter saying, so long, everybody.